CHI Files, the ultimate Bears podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
All right, let's head out to Chicago where Jeremy Stoltz from BearReport.com and at BearReport on Twitter, that's easy enough to remember, is joining us today. Jeremy, help me out. It's only three games in. I don't want to throw in the towel, but there's got to be some silver lining with the Bears, you can tell me.
Well, it's tough at this point, just with the amount of injuries that they have right now. I mean, you're looking at six starters or impact players on defense who are out right now, and you saw the result of that against the Cowboys, who racked up over 400 total yards, nearly 200 rushing yards. And I don't know. I mean, maybe if some of those guys get healthy on defense, you're going to see better defensive performances going forward. But it's really the offensive side of the ball. Even when Jay Cutler was out there, it wasn't clicking. Brian Hoyer was by no means any better. So I think until they get that offensive line fixed and get a few more playmakers, I think that's about as good as it's going to get on the offensive side of the football. So, I think maybe they can win three or four, maybe five games if things go right. But if they don't get healthy, man, it's going to be a rough season for Bears fans.
And the hits keep on coming. Now Jeremy Langford out 4 to 6 weeks with a sprained ankle, trying to work their way back there. The Bears are minus 38 in point differential. I mean, this has been a real problem. How do they just keep bailing water out of the boat until they find a way to get healthy? They now face a Lions team that at least can be scored on, but they also put up some points themselves. And with that big point differential, that's got to be a big-time concern for John Fox and his crew.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned Jeremy Langford, and that's a good point, because right now the Bears have called the least runs in the NFL right now, the fewest attempts on the ground. And I think that's where things have gone wrong from the very start. And I think they need to, reestablish the run game. And it starts with this kid, the fifth rounder, Jordan Howard, who's going to replace Langford as a starter. Howard is averaging 5.6 yards per carry in limited touches so far this year. Has really shown that burst and playmaking ability that Langford hasn't shown in the first three games. So, if they can get him going, that's going to open up some play action and take things off the shoulders of Brian Hoyer, who clearly, doesn't possess the talent to carry an offense. So, if they can get that offense going, which is, the offensive line has opened up some holes for Jordan Howard. They've looked good at times. They can get a little bit more consistency, then that's their only real hope, because I don't think that the passing game really just has enough talent to compete, with some of these better defenses in the NFC.
So if the idea going forward is to sort of shorten the game, keep it close, keep it on the ground, and reduce the mistakes, here's a strange question for you. We all know how big Jay Cutler's contract is. We all know how divisive he's been as a player. And I think a lot of Bears fans know that starting next spring, he doesn't have a lot of dead money on the cap. What are the odds that Jay Cutler starts another game for the Chicago Bears, period, healthy or not?
Well, it's a really good question, and I think as far as this season goes, it really depends on what Brian Hoyer is able to do here in the next couple of games while Cutler is out. If there's no improvement from Hoyer, I don't see any reason to keep him out there. Cutler is getting paid a lot of money, like you mentioned, this year. You might as well make him earn it out there and see what you can do. He is the more talented quarterback of the two, but going forward, yeah, I think there's only $3 million in guaranteed money beyond this season. And you save a lot, and you kind of are able to move on from an era that really wasn't very productive under Jay Cutler over the last nine seasons. So I think that's definitely on the Bears' minds. And, the issue is, and this was an issue last offseason, something they didn't address, is they don't really have any other options, no young guy in the pipeline. And, if you're going to get rid of Jay Cutler, then, the grass isn't always green on the other side. So I think that if that's the plan, if that's the route you want to go, you have to look at an early draft pick at a quarterback in this year's draft. Hopefully you can develop him and he can turn out and produce like some of these young quarterbacks have done in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it does seem that they've been able to ramp up pretty quickly. Of course, the notable exception to that is the guy that was picked overall first, Jared Goff, who hasn't come close to seeing the field on a Rams team that doesn't appear to have very good quarterbacking. So that's not always the panacea as well. I wanted to talk about a little funny moment in the loss to the Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott hopped over Chris Brzezinski in a very impressive highlight reel hurdle. not really all that surprising. Ezekiel Elliott ran hurdles. His mom was an elite college heptathlete, so he can do that. I thought it was terrific, though, Przinski, who ended up being, unfortunately, posterized a little bit, if you will, basically brought up the necessity to, well, form tack a little better and keep your head up. Yeah, it's a temptation to go low and lower your head and kind of take them out. But in this case, you know, keeping your head up, I thought that Przinski did a pretty good job of accepting that with aplomb. And then not only that, giving an opportunity to remind the kids, hey, guys, don't lower your head. Not only is it unhealthy for you, this stuff happens too.
Yeah, I agree. And then form tackling has kind of gone by the way in the NFL. So, yeah, good elite running backs like Ezekiel Elliott are gonna take advantage of that, and that's what you saw in that game.
Going forward with this team and with John Fox as head coach, obviously, you know, he's still pretty new there. But is there a situation, because you look at their injury situation, you look at the way the team is kind of discombobulated. Alshon Jeffrey looks good. If they don't get something with the running game, though, it's hard to think how they win more than, like you said, four or five games. Is John Fox potentially at risk, or is this with the understanding when he signed here that there was going to be a little bit of a time frame that was going to require turnover and personnel?
Well, I think if you look at what not only John Fox, but the general manager, Ryan Pace, what they inherited from the past regime, really there wasn't talent at hardly any position. They've had to really restructure every single position outside of the quarterback position, and they were left with a lot of bad contracts. So I think it's tough to put them on the hot seat after two bad seasons, but I definitely think that grace period is going to be over after this year, and if they don't win next year, I think you get another – a situation with a clean house with, you know, what they did with Phil Emery and Mark Trestman. You know, you could see Pace and Fox go again in that scenario, just because you can't. I mean, how many years are you supposed to give these guys? I mean, if that's 3 years where they're not showing any improvement and they really haven't drafted very well on top of it, Kevin White is trying to look horrible out there. So, you know, you've got two top 10 picks that really aren't showing it yet. I don't know how you can justify keeping them around, even with John Fox's past. I think you have to look forward and maybe try and go in another direction.
It is certainly tough to rebuild a team when you miss on high draft picks. That's really a concern.
Right.
I was talking to some folks in Cleveland, another team that hasn't won a game yet, and they talked about how the fan base, they feel the same way. It's been forever. They're waiting for a turnaround. It's Cleveland. We know how this works for them. And they said at this point, their fan base doesn't even really care if they win or lose anymore. In fact, they just as soon lose and go get that high draft pick in the hope that they can get the quarterback, and that might be enough to spark a turnaround, like Carson Wentz has done in Philadelphia, or even Dak Prescott pressed into service down in Dallas. How do the Bears fans feel about this? Now, this is a legendary, great football town. I have a tough time thinking they can be that defeatist, but as you pointed out, it's been pretty rough lately. At this point, is it getting to where they're thinking, all right, just suck it up, and then next year we'll flip it around and get better?
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, at this point, it's not only with Jay Cutler. I mean, you look at the 20 years of quarterback play in Chicago before even Jay Cutler got here, and it was just a wasteland of second and third string quarterbacks that weren't getting it done. You know, I think at this point, it's been shown in the NFL, and I believe it to be that the quarterback is by far the most important position on the field, not only in the NFL, but I think in relative to any sport, the quarterback is the most important position. And we've seen it with, Aaron Rodgers has won a Super Bowl when he had no run game, no offensive line, and no defense. I mean, that's a great quarterback can carry a team, where good quarterbacks, if a bad quarterback, if you don't have every other piece, you're not going to win with a bad quarterback. So I think at this point, after so many years and so many losing seasons and so many campaigns where just the quarterbacks were horrible. Yeah, you look at Carson Wentz and you look at some of these young quarterbacks like that, Prescott, who the Bears have played, both of them so far, you've seen them up close and said, wow, if you can just get one of those guys and build around those guys, then you have an opportunity. And I think, if you got to go through another losing season and go 1-15 or whatever it takes, and you can get that stud with the first or second overall pick, I think it's worth it to do it.
All right, they have five opponents in October, Jeremy. Throw a dart for me. Lions, Colts, Jaguars, Packers, Vikings. When do the Bears get their first win?
Yeah, that's maybe the Jaguars. The Jaguars haven't looked good the past couple of weeks. I know Blake Bortles looked horrible this past weekend. So maybe the Jaguars, but the division games are always so tough in the NFC North, and the Vikings just look outstanding right now. Lions look pretty good in that second half, and they can put up points at will. So, maybe the Jaguars. I mean, Like I said, we're talking about a team that will be lucky to get four wins, and hopefully one comes in the next month.
The website is bearreport.com. The Twitter handle is at bearreport. The man is Jeremy Stoltz. Thanks for joining us today. And, you know, chin up in Chicago. You know, in the end, you still live in a pretty amazing city. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, and we have the Chicago Cubs to root for, so, you know, that keeps us going for now.
Bingo, and that's exactly what those fans in Cleveland were hanging on their hats too. You know, you have another team to watch, that's pretty good. So keep that in mind. Jeremy, hopefully we get a chance to check back with you at some point later in the season. Thanks so much for the insight.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Stoltz at Bear Report on Twitter. Go ahead and give him a follow and stick around because we'll be right back with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett in his very first start showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. It seems like it was almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress to the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win.
Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance. From the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to the most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have 8 starters that were our former first or second-round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's a pretty lofty bar, you know, to
right.
2 games. And so, oh my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-to-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created. the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of a less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game, Drew Brees feels like, if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today?
Oh,
hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most, the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after two, you know, after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know it's, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner then Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now, Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine, but I like Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run, but this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold-weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games. And if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen. They're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? You know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in, so I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name's Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.